the odds of reaching a successful conclusion plummeted when the president put the tariffs on. The Chinese could not be seen to be giving in the face of threats.
The United States and China head down an uncertain trade path. It's Monday, May 13th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, resistance builds to Chinese mining. Myanmar's autonomy-seeking army. Myanmar press freedom remains uncertain. An inflatable robot. And more. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States said Sunday it expects that China will retaliate with increased tariffs on U.S. exports after President Donald Trump sharply boosted levies on Chinese products headed to the United States. Trump on Friday more than doubled tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese goods, boosting the rate from 10% to 25%, while also moving to impose tariffs on an additional $300 billion of Chinese products. China had previously imposed taxes on $110 billion of American products, but has not said how it might retaliate against Trump's latest increase in tariffs. Trade talks between the two economic superpowers have been going on in Beijing and Washington for months, but they recessed again in the U.S. Capitol Friday without a deal being reached. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke about the breakdown in talks with Philip Levy, a senior fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs who served as a senior economist for trade under President George W. Bush.
This seems to be a clear negotiating failure on the part of the United States. And if President Trump had wanted to have a breakdown and impose tariffs, he would have been much better off doing that with his original deadline, which was January 1st. Here he signaled weakness and then stuck tariffs on anyways, which I think has left the Chinese fairly confused.
What do you think the Chinese, Mr. Liu, was expecting when he flew here for talks with the U.S. negotiators?
I doubt much of what happened surprised him. I think China did not want to be seen as walking away from the table unilaterally. I think the odds of reaching a successful conclusion plummeted when the president put the tariffs on. The Chinese could not be seen to be giving in the face of threats. So he probably expected to hear the U.S. position, and that's what he got.
How much of this is the saving face part of the Chinese personality?
Oh, it's very important that I don't think that there's politics in China, just like in the U.S., even though obviously they're quite different and it's not a democracy, but it still does matter, and it was never going to be viable to have President Trump, figuratively speaking, shake a big stick at them and then have them concede that same week.
Where does this leave the whole situation?
I think it leaves the administration in a very difficult position. The president seemed to signal optimism, but it's hard to see how they back away from this. It looks like the next step is for the Chinese to retaliate against the United States.
And what does that entail? Obviously, one would think that they're just going to, you know, double what the United States has done back to the United States, right?
Well, they had tried to match the United States tariff for tariff. Of course, part of the thing with this relationship is an underlying imbalance such that they cannot stick tariffs on as many imports as the U.S. can. But there are other things they can do to make life uncomfortable for the U.S., and I expect we're going to find out what those are.
Any ideas?
They can make life difficult for U.S. companies operating in China. They can make investment difficult. They can oppose us, you know, at various international forums if they choose to.
What does this do to the American consumer?
It doesn't do anything good for the American consumer. It's, you know, frequently the Chinese were importing things which U.S. consumers didn't use that much of, like sorghum, for example, which was good for American farmers that there were, you know, pork products that were parts of a pig that or of a chicken also that, you know, the U.S. didn't tend to consume. So those things don't have good alternative markets. It's not that the consumers are going to be thrilled with that. Consumers are going to face higher costs when they're buying goods that either were directly made in China or that used parts made in China.
And what about farmers? What about U.S. agriculture?
U.S. agriculture is going to feel the pain. I think they thought that relief was on the way. They've been having a hard time. They've been facing low prices, and I thought they were going to get their hard-won markets back. It doesn't appear to be the case.
What does this do to U.S.-China relations? We have all heard President Trump say he has a great relationship with Xi Jinping and something's going to happen. And then he kind of steps back and says maybe the Chinese think they'll do better if the Democrats win the next election. What is the state, economically anyway, and maybe politically, between the United States and China?
Well, you have a great deal of suspicion underlying the relationship, and that's not a partisan dispute. I think that comes from both Democrats and Republicans, and there are some good reasons for that. However, the president has not really left a path for the Chinese to accommodate the U.S., or at least not do it in a way where they think they're going to get relief. So I think that's more likely the reason why they're not giving in, that plus requests that are not always feasible for the Chinese. So I think it's a very tenuous situation where the relationships are strained, suspicions are growing, and we see trade breaking down.
What do you think forced President Donald Trump to double the tariffs? In his mind, anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think President Trump was forced at all. I think it was a choice that he made, and it was a very bad one. I think his thought was the Chinese hadn't given in to U.S. demands. There was anger at what they viewed as Chinese backsliding on issues that had been discussed earlier, and he perhaps thought that if he upped the threat, that the Chinese would cave. They didn't. They hadn't on any previous occasion, and I don't think anyone who understood the Chinese thought that that was going to work well, but that's the president's preferred approach.
So does this mean that the Chinese will also stop, at least at some point, putting up a friendly face toward the United States?
I think many countries that have had to negotiate with President Trump have determined that there's no point in trying to match his peak and to get angry or to trade insults. So you say that things are fine, even as they deteriorate, but you keep up a brave face. I expect the Chinese will continue to do that.
The U.S. has claimed that China steals technology and forces U.S. companies to divulge trade secrets it uses in its own production of advanced technology products. On Saturday, Trump suggested that China could be waiting to see if he wins re-election next year, but said Beijing would be much worse off during a second term of his in the White House. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. The United States expects China tariff retaliation. Critics of Indonesian president faces treason charges. Duterte allies seek to dominate Philippine midterm polls. Rights groups and family demand answers on missing Thai activists. Vietnam jails two activists for spreading propaganda on Facebook. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more, well, where else? On Facebook at VOA Asia and also the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Zimbabwe has clamored for outside investment in recent years, but now villagers north of the capital are resisting a Chinese mining project that they say will spoil the environment and fail to bring them much benefit. Columbus Mahavenga reports from Harare.
People in Domboshava, a rock area about an hour drive northeast of Harare, are mobilizing against a Chinese company's move to open a quarry mine here. This 70-year-old woman says the proposed project by Anhua Jiang Company will damage the sanctity of this area, which she says has sacred caves, springs, and snakes.
The Chinese are the money mongers of the Zimbabweans, because when they monk them, they take the riches here, they take it to China. They don't develop our places, so we don't need them here. Seriously, with a deeper heart, with a deeper mind, seriously, we are disappointed. We said no and no, and that is maleducated no. But I'm just thankful for the unborn children of this inheritance and of this legacy.
Energy Mutodi, the area's representative in parliament and deputy information minister, also opposes the planned quarry project. He denies his position on the issue goes against President Emmerson Mnangagwa's mantra that Zimbabwe is open for business.
It's open to the business, but not business that is going to affect our environment. To develop, yes, but let our environment remain intact. We cannot have a situation where people come here, mine, and take away the proceeds.
Mutodi added that the Chinese company promised to create 500 local jobs, but so far has advertised only 40 jobs for the $500 million project. The Chinese embassy in Harare refused to comment on the issue, saying it was not a Beijing project. At a meeting with the villagers, a Anhua Jiang representative denied that the 33-hectare project would displace thousands of local residents.
People took the wrong information from whoever they listened to. No one is going to be displaced. This project is not going to affect, even a grave is not going to be moved. But there's a misconception of saying 20,000 people are going to be moved. We propose that the graves will be fenced. There's a water well, a spring which is just above the gravesite. We also propose that water will be fenced too.
Zimbabwe's Environmental Management Agency is expected to make the final decision on whether the Chinese company can go ahead with its planned quarry mining project here. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Happening now in Asia, officials in Pakistan say the death toll from the overnight militant raid on a luxury hotel near the China-run strategic port of Gwadar has risen to at least 5, including 4 hotel employees and a Pakistani Navy soldier. Pakistan's military's media wing says all 3 terrorists involved were killed. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're starting out a brand new week on VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us. A small autonomous ethnic army with direct connections to China has been operating inside of Myanmar, and for many years. In Myanmar Shan State, the United Wa State Army, or UWSA, has recently celebrated 3 decades of peace and autonomy since 1989. That's when the Communist Party of Burma was ousted and the new leaders formed what is now Myanmar's largest ethnic faction. With shared culture and business interests with China, the UWSA is seen as an example for smaller ethnic armies also seeking autonomy within Myanmar as ceasefire talks continue ahead of the 2020 election, as we hear from Steve Sanford reporting for VOA.
The United Wa State Army showed their military might while celebrating 3 decades of autonomy in a special zone bordering China. Many of the ethnic groups still in conflict with the government forces joined in the event, including a Kachin dancer, formerly a soldier in the Communist Party of Burma.
In the past, when I lived in the Wa State area, children and adults didn't even know how to put their clothes on. I taught them. They lived in weak bamboo houses. But now, 30 years later, they are developing very fast.
Much of the economic development has come from China, a fact punctuated by their special envoy for Asian affairs seated next to the Wa leader. Despite the many projects in the works, including China's massive Belt and Road Initiative, senior Wa officials say the bond is purely one of friendship.
We have a long-time relationship with China because we are the ethnic group along the China border, and the Chinese are our brothers. Some of the ethnic Wa live in China, some in America. In the future, we are going to be united in China.
While the UWSA is not directly involved in the ongoing ceasefire talks, they are part of the larger Federal Political Negotiation and Consultative Committee, with many of the meetings held on Chinese soil. 7 ethnic organizations are part of the committee, including the United League of Arakan, whose army is active in Rakhine State and aware of China's leverage.
China is a major power, our neighboring country. It has a lot of influence in terms of investment and and politically, economically, you know, in many arenas. So, they can help.
As the government extends its unilateral ceasefire to June 30th, observers will be watching to see what effect the UWSA and its ally, the Chinese government, will have on future peace plans. Steve Sanford for VOA News.
Coming up, more from Myanmar and the state of press freedom. You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. This news from VOA Asia, a North Korean cargo ship seized by the United States because of suspicions it was used to violate international sanctions, arrived Saturday at the capital of the American territory. The ship was detained in April as it traveled toward Indonesia. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Myanmar's release of two journalists last week came as a welcome surprise to families and supporters. Free press advocates are skeptical the move means real change has come to that nation. The journalists were granted amnesty after spending more than 500 days in prison for covering the government crackdown on Rohingya Muslims. VOA's Brian Patton reports.
Reuters journalists Walone and Cho So Woo embraced their families after being released from prison on Tuesday. Their colleagues at Reuters also celebrated the long-anticipated news.
Since their arrest 511 days ago, they have become symbols of the importance of press freedom around the world. We welcome their return.
The two Reuters journalists were jailed for allegedly violating state security laws, charges that were widely believed to be falsified and used to punish them for reporting on the killing of Rohingya Muslims by Myanmar security forces in 2017.
It's quite clear that they did nothing wrong here. This is all about the government and the military trying to persecute critics who dare report stories that they don't like.
Pressure from Western democracies and advocacy groups may have helped secure their release, along with thousands of other prisoners, as part of an annual amnesty tradition.
To the extent all of us, certainly in democratic societies, can help support independent journalism and media, it redounds to our benefit, because ultimately we'll have more accountable governance and the rule of law and better outcomes.
But the release also comes with a warning to all journalists that work in this highly restricted media environment.
The Myanmar government's message is that, we are human, we know you need to meet with your family again, but don't dare to cross the line anymore.
The case of jailed Reuters reporters in Myanmar is just one of a growing number of assaults and intimidation tactics used against journalists.
It is only one drop in a huge bucket of arrests and murders of journalists around the world, and it's definitely a battle that we have to keep fighting.
The United Nations says this reprieve does not indicate significant free speech progress in Myanmar, a country still in transition from a military to civilian-led government. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
This news from VOA Asia. A Vietnamese court has jailed two activists on charges of publishing damaging anti-state propaganda about the communist-run country. That according to state media. The latest convictions under a hardline leadership intolerant of dissent. Visit VOA Asia Facebook, the social media site where you'll find all the big stories. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, lightweight, cheap to make, and easier to send into outer space. Academics here in the United States are developing an inflatable robot with money from NASA, the American Space Agency. NASA says the blow-up technology can handle the cosmos and existence right back here on Earth. Arash Arabasadi unpacks and inflates the details.
This is King Louie.
He is an inflatable robot designed by Nubotics. So we've designed all of the code and controllers that we upload to him to make him move how we want him to move.
Researchers say it could breach tricky areas in search and rescues, help old or disabled people, or even service satellites in space.
Our soft robot research is about making robots that are safe around people or anything else that you're worried about breaking.
Researchers at Brigham Young University, or BYU, are developing an inflatable robot with their eyes on utility.
The soft robots that we work with are fabric, and on the inside, it's kind of like a bike tire. We have an inner tube in there. There's different air chambers. You have some that make the structure of the robot, and others are what make it move around.
Because King Louis is inflatable, he folds flat for easy transport. That caught NASA's attention and brought their funding to the project.
That means we can collapse them down into really small spaces. So for NASA, that's interesting because if it's small and if it's lightweight, it's cheaper and easier to send it up into space.
Louis is also less likely to cause or suffer career-ending injury due to his soft outer shell.
So if you're thinking of hammering or trying to assemble things together, a lot of times that's dangerous. They're going to break their gears. They're going to hurt themselves. We don't worry about that with a robot that's full of air.
The team at BYU says in addition to research, they would like to use Louis to promote science and technology education in elementary schools.
We're interested in soft robots that can actually help those with motor impairments, that can work in your house because they'd be safe to be around your children or older adults.
Researchers say King Louis is inherently safe, and their goal is for him to help people in their daily lives. But they also say it'll be 5 to 10 more years before his technology is more widely available. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
As our planet heats up, it's not just extreme weather that's causing trouble, but also the unintended consequences of that heat. And in some cases of some European forests, it's creating fertile ground for spruce bark beetles. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us more.
Long, hot summers have meant less water in a number of European spruce forests, and trees already weakened by drought are being further devastated by these small bark beetles. The beetles aren't invasive and play an important role in the local ecosystem, but warm weather means there are more of them, and the forests are paying the price.
Last year, there were 3 generations instead of 2 across the Czech Republic. From one beetle in the spring, you get as many as thousands of beetles at the end of the season.
Last year, bark beetles were found in nearly 18 million cubic meters of spruce, almost double their normal range, and that amount is expected to rise this summer.
Persistent dryness has dramatically sped up the reproduction of the bark beetle and contributed to an increased reproduction of this beetle of at least one generation.
The problem is forcing forest managers to cut down affected spruce forests in the Czech Republic, Slovakia, northern Austria, and the German region of Bavaria. And those spruce trees are big money for the region's timber industry.
Pictures like this are a problem for humans, they are a problem for forest management, but they are not per se a problem for the forest and all the species that live in the forest. And I think this is important, an important perspective to keep in mind.
The loss of all this spruce costs the Czech economy nearly $900 million last year. And forest managers are unsure about how to fix the problem.
I really cannot say what you probably want to hear, that we will be able to stop these disturbances in the future. We won't be.
It's a problem on many levels. Less spruce for the timber industry, fewer trees to fight climate change, and fewer tourist dollars from hikers who once enjoyed these regional forests. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online, VOA Asia Facebook, and, of course, at our website, voanews.com, where you can just click on the Programs tab. Find our program. You can hear this particular program or any previous editions that have come out. We also are heard on the radio throughout Asia. Great radio stations like Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic in Singapore. Thanks to everyone there who's tuned in today. Of course, we send our thanks to director Tracy Carter and our engineer Zainab Abdel-Rahman, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.